I was writing a little piece for this book about why I wrote it, you know, trying to explain why. And I was mentioning one of the characters, and when I finished it and went back to read it, I realized I'd used the wrong name for that character. It was another character's name. And I thought, oh, my God, have I been away from that thing that long? But the fact of the matter is, you do forget. And what I'm working on now is a totally different type of book. It's not as, it's more episodic than plotted. And consequently, I think that also tends to make you forget.
Well, Dark 30 is not your first book. Tell me about what you've done in the past.
Well, the first book I had published was in 1976 with Houghton Mifflin. It was called The Year the Lights Came On. It was something of a Tom Sawyer-type story about... I think so many writers go back to their experiences for the first novel, and this was about the experience of getting electricity on the Northeast Georgia farm that I grew up on in 1947. I was about 10 years old before we had electricity. And really, I used it as sort of as a device. I wanted to write about isolation, and that seemed to me to be a pretty good device to use. The second book was called After Eli, which is was also published by Houghton Mifflin in 1981. And I wrote it quaintly, in sort of response to James Dickey's Deliverance, and I want you to understand that I have great admiration for James Dickey. I think he's one of the great writers in this country. But I had disagreed with Jim's treatment of the mountain people, and I just wanted to do something to say, this is what I think about the mountain people, and it turned out to be After Eli. It's the story of an outsider who comes into a very isolated mountain region, and because he's an Irishman and an actor, and the setting is 1939, he'd come out of the Chautauqua Circuit. He has this amazing ability to charm the entire community. But he's also an evil person, and I wanted to write a book about how those mountain people do survive against that that kind of influence.
Is After Eli still in print?
Well, it's been remaindered. I think it's available at some bookstores. But I don't exactly know how that works. The publishing industry is a mystery to me when something is available and when it's not.
I've had Dickey in once before, and he's supposed to come back to see me. Well, he's not going to come into New York just to see me, but he is supposed to be back next month, and I've talked to him for a couple of years. So it'd be interesting to talk to him about... I don't know. Do you know if he's read it?
I don't think he has. I'm not really sure. He gave me a wonderful quote on Dark 30, but I'm not sure that he read After Eli. And, you know, obviously I wasn't really trying to pick on Dickey, because my admiration for him just knows no bounds. But it might not have been so much Deliverance as it was the... I spent many, many years at the Atlanta Journal as a film reviewer, and I think I grew tired of watching the stereotypical film of the southern setting and the mountain setting and everything else, and it might well be that that was the greatest influence of all, but I really wanted to write something about the nobility of the hill people, and I think it might have been Jim's book that gave me the impetus to do it. You know, it was something, okay, fine, now I feel like I can answer something. But I don't think that he has read it. If he has, I have never talked to him about it.
That, I guess, brings us to Dark 30. What was your mental state as you were writing that book?
Quite frankly, Don, I was angry most of the time, because when I started the book, I use reference points. Now, it's not what I mean by that is that I refer to something in my own mind or in my own thinking or own experience to start writing. I think most writers do that. And in the state of Georgia 10 years ago, 11 years ago, there was a very horrible murder in South Georgia, the Allday family. It was a story, I mean, it was a family of six people, really good people, who were slaughtered. And to me, there was a failure of the judicial system to get justice in that. But that was not the thing that really caused me to write the book, though that had always been on my mind, and there is probably some obvious references in the story to that. The thing that really caused me to write it is about 3 years ago, a young lady in Atlanta by the name of Jean Bice was killed in a public park in a suburban area of Atlanta. And it was a very, from what I understand, because I haven't researched it that much, I wanted to stay away from that because I didn't want to be influenced, but she was killed in a very obscene manner, what I would consider obscene. The guy that was finally tried and convicted of the murder they did not ask for the death penalty because a juror did not think that it was obscene enough for the death penalty. Well, that made me very angry. So I wanted to write a book where if the judicial system doesn't work, if it doesn't happen in the courtroom, I think people are going to make it happen out of the courtroom. And maybe that's part of that North Georgia upbringing also, that sort of sense of justice. But that the retribution would be as obscene as a crime. And that's why I wrote it. I think mostly I stayed angry throughout the writing of that book.
You are then a proponent of the death penalty.
You know, I'm not sure that I am. That's a very strange thing when I stop and think about it. I think that some of the cases that I read about, I feel like, my God, this certainly deserves the death penalty. And in other cases I read about, I think, oh no, you know, that seems to be a bit harsh. So I'm not really sure that I advocate what I've written, but I do believe this. I think that the judicial system itself has got too many loopholes in it, and that it simply doesn't work as effectively as we would like for it to work or think it should work.
Well, in Dark 30, we have three mental defectives, one a young Georgia man and the two young men he met in the service,
right.
And they murder and also kill obscenely members of the farm family whose name escapes me.
The Wade family, the Jesse Wade family.
Jesse Wade family. I believe there were six people who were killed.
That's correct.
And the accused killers are caught. And yet justice never prevailed for them. What, just to go back a second, what does, even before they commit a crime like that, what does society do with people such as the killers that you depict in Dark 30?
That's a real tough question. I don't know that society can do really too much with them. I think there are all kinds of programs. We've examined this and examined it and examined it, and I'm not sure that there is an answer that's substantial enough to say, aha, this is the answer, therefore this is what we should do. I think there's so many varying opinions on the kinds of personalities that the environment perhaps or whatever it may be that makes up this kind of character. I've always argued, I've known people in those environments, and I've known some who've come out to be evil, some have done all sorts of things, and I've known others to walk out of that same environment and do quite well, be successful, and at least not be the kind of evil person that I have portrayed in this book. I don't know that there's an answer to it at all, Don. I think that we cannot stop looking for something to do. I don't know where that responsibility is. I don't know if it's with the community or with the government or what it is. But I think we've got to look at a lot of the sociological impacts that are prevalent today.
You don't, in the end, Jesse Wade gets his retribution, but you don't advocate this sort of revenge, do you?
No, I do not. As a matter of fact, I didn't make that up. That's something that a friend of mine told me about, that whole manner of retribution was something he told me about from the Midwest. I was horrified when I heard that, and I thought, my God, that's the most brutal thing I've ever heard in my entire life. But then I started checking around and found that's happened in Georgia, it's happened in Tennessee and South Carolina. Obviously, it's been around for quite a while. I just never heard about it, nor had read about it anywhere. But I don't really advocate that at all, because I think that's too brutal. That's probably too brutal. But I think people feel that way. Now, I know that if someone were to come and to slaughter my family, my children, I would want to slaughter them back, I think. I think that's my natural instinct is to say, wait a minute, I've got to get them back. I think a lot of people feel that way.
That's why we have police vigilantes. Well, it's certainly a dramatic book and wonderfully written. Tell me a little bit about yourself. Had you, I know you were in, worked for the Atlanta Constitution, a journalist. Had you always wanted to turn to fiction? Or at what point in your life did you want to turn to fiction?
Curiously, Don, I had never thought about it until I left the newspaper. I'd worked in journalism almost 15 years as a sports writer and then as a film and theater reviewer, though my background had been in theater, and I think I'm probably more influenced by theater than I am literature as a writer. But when I left the newspaper, I had the opportunity to do some freelance work for a magazine in Atlanta. The editor of that magazine was a wonderful man named Jim Townsend, who simply believed that I could write. And I used to argue with him and say, Jim, I write film and I write theater. And he said, no, you're a writer and you don't know it. So he persuaded me to start doing some writing. And then another very dear friend of mine, Pat Conroy, the author of the great Santini and the Lords of Discipline, Pat helped me make a connection with Houghton Mifflin, and I submitted some material, and they accepted it, and I was terrified, just absolutely terrified of the prospect of writing a novel, you know. But having gone through the experience, I can tell you that it's a delightful thing to do.
It must feel wonderful holding that first book in your hand as it comes or after it came off the press.
It was stunning. It was absolutely stunning. I didn't think I could write that. I really didn't think I could do it. But part of that is because I grew up in a very large family. There were 12 children in the family up in northeast Georgia. And we were blessed by having a number of accomplished people in the family. And I was the 11th of that 12, so I kept looking in front of me at those brothers and sisters and saying, I'll never be able to do anything like they're doing. But it's fortunate that it worked out as it did. And I feel very good about it. I enjoy writing now. And I think all those years in journalism, I thought of myself as a journalist, not as a writer. But now I think that I'm a writer, and that's a very good feeling.
See, a little newspaper clipping. I was sent that you have to escape your own house to do some writing. Is that right?
Yes, I do. I have 4 children, 3 still living at home, and I have just never been able to write at home. I can't concentrate, and I feel much better if I can go to some very cheap motel, close the door and close the shades on the window and turn the typewriter on. If I can do that, I can work around the clock for days at a time and turn out a lot of words. And I feel comfortable being alone that way, because the newspaper training had a lot to do with it, the discipline of sitting at a typewriter and turning something out. And so I don't wander off very much when I sit to write. I concentrate on it and I get it over with.
You must check into those same motel your reporter in Dark 30 stayed in.
As a matter of fact, exactly that. The model for that motel is exactly like two of the motels that I've lived in my time writing.
You're not working for a power company?
Yes, I work for a utility company, which is something that I enjoy doing. I like the idea of working and writing at the same time. I left this corporation about 3 or 4 years ago, determined that I was going to try to write and do nothing but that, because I'd never been able to have that freedom to do it. And I had a little money put aside, and I thought, well, I'll just go write a book now. I was gone 8 months. I did not write a word, not one single word. I came back to the corporation, and 2 nights later, I was sitting at the typewriter at midnight, writing and very happy.
Well, you sound like an engaging guy. I'm sorry that you couldn't make it up to New York this time, but I hope that if you do come up to New York, you can let me know, and maybe we can do an update and see how this book has changed your life and what you're doing next.
I promise you I'll do that, Don. I appreciate the interview, and I'm very, very happy that you have read and enjoyed Dark 30.
I did indeed, and I wish you that. When is the publication date? Is it already out?
As a matter of fact, I think it's today.
Is it today?
Today.
Oh, well, I hit you at a good time. I probably won't air this for another 2 weeks, because I usually am 2 or 3 weeks ahead on my features, but it looks like it's going to time out about right. I'm glad they sent me the proof early, so I was able to read it while I was on vacation. Listen, thank you very, very much. It was certainly a pleasure talking to you.
Don, I'll find you when I get to New York.